Hey y'all, Kat here, and I have an exciting announcement. We are kicking off the first ever KSA book club, and you are invited. This is a completely free book club that the team and I want to put together, and our first book is my absolute favorite business book, Traction by Gina Wickham. We're going to kick off on February 19th, and when you join and you read Traction alongside of us, you're going to learn how to streamline, simplify, and honestly just take back control of your business without adding more to your plate. You're finally going to get time to work on your business, not just in it. So here's how it works. We're kicking off on February 19th, and we are going to meet every Wednesday at 2 p.m. for 5 weeks. We'll discuss the book and how it applies specifically to you and your small business in 2025. So if you feel like your business is running you instead of the other way around, you definitely don't want to miss this book club. Whether you're a solopreneur or you're leading a small team, Traction will help you streamline all of the operations that you have going on, tackle your biz goals, and ultimately just take your business to the next level in 2025. If you're ready to join, you can grab your free spot. It's totally free, you guys. You can grab your spot now. You can start reading with us. Just click the link in the show notes to sign up. You'll get all of the details, and I cannot wait to see you on Zoom on February 19th at 2 p.m. for our very first KSA book club meeting.
Welcome to Think Like an Integrator, a podcast for business visionaries who love to dream but lack a team to do it all. I'm your host and integrator, Kat Schmoyer. When you know how to integrate, you will always be able to innovate. I'm here to tell you how. Welcome to the show.
Y'all, welcome back to another episode of Think Like an Integrator. This one is another fun episode. I have Erin here with me to talk all about crafting sales page copy that converts. We are so excited to like dig into this content with you guys. I also want you guys to just like get to know Erin too. She is on the KSA team. She also, side note, was my matron of honor like forever ago, which I feel like people need to know the fun connections of our lives, Erin. They just have to know. So we have so much history as friends before business. And so it's just always really exciting when those two paths come together. And now we get to talk very hyper-focused around some business things that we are both working on. She is on our team as one of our copywriters. And something that is super unique to Erin, which we're going to talk about in this episode, is that not only can she write amazing copy, but she's also a great designer. So when we're working on sales page design in particular, it's always wonderful to know we can give a project to someone who can handle both of those things, who can really laser in on design that is strategic and high converting, but also think about the copy that needs to be on that page. And Erin does such a great job of that. So I'm really, really excited for you guys to get to know her a little bit and hear some of the tips that she has to share around writing sales page copy. So thank you for being here today, Erin.
Of course. I'm so excited. It'll be great.
It's going to be so good. So let's like kick off with a little bit of your background. Would love for you to share with everyone kind of what led you to this copywriting and designer role that you're in right now.
This is great. Okay. So I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs kind of, I fell into this a bit, but if you go back to even when I was a kid, like 10 years old, I always loved writing. I always had like a notebook with me and I was a big writer, and I've always loved a good aesthetic for sure. However, my opinion of good aesthetic has definitely changed over the years, for sure.
Praise but the Lord.
I know, thank God. My room when I was a kid was hot pink and lime green, so a little different. But I think that those two loves have come together to really create in me this ability to walk down this path as like copywriter and designer. So when I was in undergrad, I majored in English. And when I got out of that, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with it. And I kind of stumbled into my career in higher education, ended up getting my master's in higher education, worked in that field. And a lot of times I would volunteer for projects in higher ed in my roles where I would be doing the marketing on our team. And I say marketing with like quotes beside it. So like if we were doing like a recruitment campaign for students or the social media management or the website copy for our services and stuff like that, I would always volunteer for it because I really enjoyed those aspects of those jobs and stuff. And so I got really good at those things. And so I would volunteer. And then it just became like a, oh, Erin's going to do that. And then other offices would come to me and be like, so Erin, could you actually do hours kind of thing? And so that was fun. But then I also started to use that to help some of my friends that had started small businesses, right? And so they wanted to have their own website and do their own things. And I was like, okay. And they were trying to use these like templates and stuff, but it still was just really clunky and it wasn't really working. And so I would really go in there and try to set them up for how to communicate their message clearly, effectively, but then also like design it in a way that was beautiful for their clients and their audience to be able to see. And so that was really fun and I loved it. And then when I had my daughter in 2023, I wanted to transition to not being in the corporate world from 9 to 5 every day. And so this was a skill that I was able to use to kind of join the KSA team, have a lot more flexibility to be a mom to her, but still be using these skills that I really enjoy to use to help entrepreneurs and the KSA team grow. And I love that. I love this outlet.
Cool journey of like freelancing, you know, from starting to dabble and like for anybody out there that's maybe listening to this and maybe you haven't started a business yet, or maybe you're wondering like, what am I good at? Like even just looking at this air, like you probably never thought like, oh, this little bit that I'm doing here in higher ed could potentially lead to something else entirely, yet it totally did.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like we could do a podcast on just that. However, we're not going to, but yes, it is crazy how those little skills can add up to be something really marketable and useful.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dig in specifically with sales pages when it comes to writing and designing. I'd love to talk more about how your unique blend of skills, like being able to write and design like at the same time, essentially, yes, versus having the designer come in or having the copywriter, you know, working on things individually. Like, how do you feel like that gives you an edge when it comes to creating a sales page?
That's a great question. So I think a strong sales page needs both copy, strategic copy written to convert viewers into buyers, but then also a clean and cohesive design. I think that they have to work together and they work hand in hand. And if one of them is missing, I think the entire thing falls apart. Therefore, I think my skills as a writer is critical, but more importantly than just being a writer, I think that like I'm a really empathetic human. And so when I am designing from a copy standpoint, I can sit in the seat of the potential client or buyer and speak to their struggles, their desires, and ultimately the outcome that they hope for. And that allows me to write strong copy. I think that, you know, I have like writing strategy that I learned in school and stuff, but I think that being an empathetic human and understanding the side that the audience wants to see is important. So I think that that gives me an edge when writing for a client sales page. But then I think that I'm somebody who is just like naturally marketing minded from a design standpoint too. So like, I think that I see the vital importance of design on a sales page. For example, let's just think about like when you pull up to a stoplight outside of like a shopping center and you see like the various yard signs marketing different things, like maybe it's like power washing your house or whatnot, like whatever, right? There are ones that are like more professionally printed, designed, you know, like they might not be the fanciest, most aesthetic thing in the world, but they're like professional and you can tell that there was effort put in behind it, right? And then there's ones that literally are like white with like a Sharpie on it that's like, call this number.
Like a personal cell phone number on it. You're like, I don't know if that's like, the smartest
I might
way.
Be murdered if I call it. And like those signs, if you think about it, those signs are in the exact same place. They have, maybe they even have the exact same words. Maybe they both just say like, we'll power wash your house. Call this number. Okay. And they have the exact same marketing strategy, right? However, the one that is professionally designed is going to yield more clients, hands down. Why? Because they visually have presented and communicated their message and that their business psychologically communicates like, we're going to take better care of our clients. Right. It communicates a clean brand. We care about how we look, therefore we care about how we make you look and all of those things. And I think my skills to see a brand's website and design and either continue that design to be cohesive for their whole brand when designing a sales page or make recommendations of how to design something better to make their messaging more effective is really important for what I do. So that writing piece, that empathetic piece, and that visual piece all coming together, I think allows me to see it from a 360 view that makes it great for me to do all of those pieces together.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to think back too on some of the client projects since you've come on the team. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's been a mixture of, there's been some sales pages that have been like from the ground up, like we're just, we're creating the course for the first time. So in terms of other things that the team is working on, it's all from ground zero, you know, but then there's also been situations where we're tweaking existing things. Like we're going in and looking at a sales page that the client has given us for a relaunch or an evergreen funnel or something else. And we're having to look at it and audit it and figure out what do we need to do. And so I feel like that's where those skills, again, it's like thinking about it from the sign perspective of like, okay, well, I'm looking at a sign that's already here, but like, what should we do to make it a little bit better? Like, how can we like really level up this situation versus, okay, we just need a sign. We don't have one at all. So what are we supposed to do? And they're both really important. And we've likely all needed them at some point in our business based on whatever project is that we're working on. And that's what you've been able to like step in and help the clients do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that both are really fun. I think it's great to somewhat have a blank slate and to be able to create it. I think auditing can be really fun too. I feel like auditing can be interesting though, because people sometimes feel like that's already their baby. And so they're a little sensitive towards like, I did this and like, this is kind of how I feel about it. And so I think speaking into those things is really fun from a strategic standpoint, but they both carry different challenges for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, this was so helpful for like just background of who you are and like what you bring to the copy and design perspective. I really want those of you guys listening to get some like very tangible, like, okay, you're working on writing a sales page or maybe you're auditing an existing sales page. So I want to like pick Erin's brain a little bit on some specific things when it comes to writing for a sales page. So I would love to know, I'm putting like negative Nancy hat on, but I feel like we learn from people's mistakes. Okay. Like I want to know what not to do. Like, let's be real. And usually when, maybe this is just part of my personality, but I feel like when I'm sitting down with someone, I typically lean to that question first versus like, what should I do? I'm like, no, tell me what not to do. Like, what did you do that didn't go well? Because I want to make sure I don't like repeat that same thing. So I would love to know biggest mistakes that you see business owners make when writing their sales pages.
This one's so good. And I would say the number one is using too many words. And so when we audit people's sales pages, the number one thing that I feel like, you know, we just talked about how like people can be a little bit like, but this is my baby. And they have poured out a lot of stuff into their copy, but they've kind of word dumped onto their copy because it is their heart, it is their bleeding message and all of that stuff. But when we have too many words, our message gets lost and it really affects the design too. I think Albert Einstein said, if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough. And I think that we can hold on to that a little bit when we're writing copy for our web pages, specifically also our sales pages. People don't want to read paragraphs and paragraphs of text convincing them that your product and service is worth it. You know, I do think that, you know, we could talk about like, you know, we're talking about sales page copy, you know, maybe those more narrative things are things that you can do through emails to connect with them and stuff. Like, I think that that's, there has a place for that, but your sales page is not necessarily that narrative written form for that. So people don't want to read all that. And when they have all those too many words, it makes your sales page look messy and chaotic. And again, you're trying to communicate a clean brand. And I don't mean clean as like the clean aesthetic. I mean clean as like professional, polished. I know what I'm talking about. I'm an expert and therefore I can explain it simply. And so there is a better strategy behind how to best communicate to your audience that you are offering to best meet their needs than word vomiting all over them. And so that would be what I would say is the worst mistake people make, is they just use way too many words when writing copy.
I can absolutely see that. I can think of situations in my own brand where I'm having to go back there and be like, what were you thinking, Kat? Like, hide half of these canvases. Like, what is going on? I can also think about, you know, specific client projects that we've had in the last year together, where there have been just too many words. And I love your example or like your suggestion of, okay, some of those words can be really helpful, specifically like the narratives and the storytelling, but there's a time and a place. And so knowing like, well, where is that? Like, what is the best marketing home for all of this thing? So maybe I need to turn this into two different emails that go out pointing to a sales page or a couple of Instagram carousel like posts there to like have some of that copy. So there's just other spots and other places where that copy can like find a better home and be easier for people to read and digest than having this crazy long form sales page.
Absolutely. 100%.
Oh, okay. Where should someone start with their sales page then? Because I feel like, especially for those of us that are starting from the very beginning, you're like, okay, well, I don't want to have too many words. So what should I focus on first if I don't want to make sure I'm becoming all like super long-winded in writing out this copy?
That's a great question. So I feel like for me, I do a lot of copy and design in tandem because I've done it so many times now that I kind of love doing it in tandem, but I don't know if I would recommend that to someone that is like starting from the ground up that maybe doesn't feel comfortable in that space. So if you have to start with one, I would say start with your copy. I think that figuring out what is my message that I am trying to communicate and then breaking it down strategically, which I know we're going to talk about, and then figuring it out how to input it into a design is probably the better recommendation. However, don't analyze that message so intensely that you can't allow yourself wiggle room once you get into the design process. Because the design process, sometimes I'll see a canvas and I'm like, this is what I want. I want it simple. I want it bold. But then I realize, well, I have like three sentences in this section. Well, I want to make this more concise. I want to make it more powerful and bold. And so write your copy, but it still allow yourself to have that movability as you go.
Absolutely. I'm only going to jump a little bit further down our like outline, Erin. So don't be like, wait, Kat, we're going off script. But I feel like this goes so hand in hand with like even the design tools that we're using. And I know that you and I have such a love for Show It, the website platform. It's just like, it's just the best for so many reasons. But this got me thinking about how wonderful it is to have so many different templates inside of Show It. Yeah. In and of itself, like template has, Show It has templates. So like when you sign up for a Show It account, like they have tons of free templates readily available. But there are also so many awesome business owners with website templates, like in their shops that I know, like I've purchased before. And so that has allowed me so much more creative freedom when I'm doing a sales page. So if I have the copy on a Google Doc, like you're saying, and then I start inputting it into a sales page, but I find like, oh, this canvas, like it's not really doing what I want, I can go and pick from an assortment of other wonderful canvases and like easily add it in. And then I don't feel like I have to design from scratch necessarily. I'm just moving things around in the website. And it's just made the design and copy process go so much smoother, in my opinion.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you. And I think, I mean, you and I talk about Show It all the time. Like, I love Show It as a designer. I think that it is so amazing to, it is so user-friendly. If you can think about what you want it to look like, I feel like in Show It, you can make it happen. And I love that. I feel like Show It's like the Canva of website design, which I mean that in the best compliment ever.
No, totally, totally. And I would never have thought that I would be comfortable like in the back end of websites. Like if you told me 5 years ago, you know, like, oh, your company is going to do a ton of stuff on the back end of website. I'd be like, you are crazy. Like, I don't know how to do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But because of Show It, honestly, I felt so much more confident. And one of the things that I do a lot with our team is I love sales pages. And so I love building out the bones of the page. Mm-hmm. So like I'll go in to Show It and literally create like, here's the bones. These are all the canvases that I want stacked on top of one another. And now how are we going to fit the copy? Like let's mesh it really well together and then working hand in hand with the copywriter. And so it's because of Show It. Like I would never... would not have been able to do that in another platform.
Love it so much.
So good. So good. Okay. So let's talk through some specifics when it comes to writing. So I know I love that your recommendation for anybody that's getting started with their sales page is, okay, start writing first. Because again, we know that you're unique, like your superpower is like writing and design together, which is why we're so grateful you're on the team. For that's one of the many reasons we love having you on the team, and our clients are so thrilled with the work that you do. But to make this like a little bit more DIY for those of you guys listening that want that, like, okay, I'm going to bootstrap my sales page. Like, we're going to help you. It's going to be a beautiful boot. Okay. Like, this thing is going to be awesome. So you and I talked through this before, and there are 7 essentials to a high converting sales page. And we actually have a free download for you guys. So it just dropped this week, like with this episode. So you guys can go into the show notes of this episode and grab that download, which has a checklist of the 7 essential sections of a sales page, and then also breaks them down in more detail. So Erin and I want to talk through that with you guys now, so you have very clear understanding of what are those 7 sections as you are looking at your Google Doc and starting to write. Because ultimately, like, we don't want you just staring at like a blinking cursor for forever. Like, we want you to feel very equipped when you are working through writing your sales page. This can also be really helpful for you guys that have existing sales pages, and maybe you were like, your cheeks, or what is it called? Like, your ears were burning. Is that the saying? Yeah. When Erin was saying, like, you have too many words, and you were like, is someone talking to me right now? What is going on? So if you're like, I don't know if my sales page is really doing, it's really putting like my best foot forward. Is my sales page converting the way that I want it to? This can be a great checklist that you can use to audit your existing sales page. So I'm going to go through that. And Erin, you are so creative. And I love that. I was like so technical. I was like, okay, the 7 essential sections, like, here we go. And you like made up a brand that we get to have a sales page around, which is so fun. So like, dig us into this a little bit. Like, what are we making a sales page for when we talk through these sections?
Okay. So I am somebody who is a very visual person. And because we're on a podcast right now and we're not visual, I felt like we needed a single example to kind of walk us through an entire sales page. And so we chose something super relatable to everybody. Is we're going to build a sales page on the stress-free meal planning guide, okay? And so I think that that's kind of, it'll just allow us to follow an entire example the entire way through so that you can see what this looks like. And so, yeah, we're excited. I think it'll be very simple for anyone to follow, kind of thing. Do you want me to jump in with headlines?
Yeah, go ahead and start with section 1 then. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first thing you need when you are looking for a high converting sales page is you need your headline and your subheadline to be strong. This is the very first thing that somebody is going to see, okay? So as soon as you open your Canvas, as soon as you open your sales page, this is what they see, and it needs to be powerful enough and compelling enough and clear enough that they understand what you are selling. Okay. An example of this, if we are looking into the stress-free meal planning guide, an example of a heading could be, imagine never stressing over what's for dinner again. Okay. And then the subheading could be something like, say goodbye to the 5 p.m. what's for dinner panic. This step-by-step guide, you'll have a simple system to plan meals, shop smarter, and get dinner on the table without the chaos. Okay. So this is like short, concise. It speaks immediately into a stress that they're having, but it's not overly wordy. You can fit this really cleanly on an opening canvas, and that's really important.
Absolutely. I call those the hero canvas, like that top canvas of knowing, like, I want it to be really, really strong. Yes. And so in this situation, like, you're getting that person, you're getting 2 different types of people. You're getting somebody that's maybe coming in cold. That's like, I'm not 100% sure what this is, but I'm going to click on it. And you're repelling and attracting right away. Like, do they stress over what's for dinner? Okay, great. They should keep reading. Do they not stress over what's for dinner? Then they don't need this and they need to and go away. And so we want to have that strong, like, repel and attract. So that's that top section. Second section, the problem and solution. So this is where you're digging further into what is the problem that they're having and almost agitating it a little bit. If you've done any sort of launch strategy, copywriting training before, you've probably heard of problem, agitation, solution. That's like a very very like traditional form of copywriting, but it works. And so we want to kind of poke at that problem a little bit more. And then we want to go ahead and give them the solution. And you're giving it to them right there. Like, this is the second section, you guys, and we're giving the solution. Mm-hmm. Because another potential problem I see with sales pages, outside of all of the wordiness that Erin mentioned, is providing the solution too far down. And you're going to lose your potential buyer if they're having to keep scrolling. We want to give them a call to action to purchase right up here at the top. So, Erin,
because we don't want them to like go into despair, right? Like, we want them to feel agitated, but we want to give them hope pretty quickly.
This is your empathetic. You're like, no, like, they could feel some hope in their life of meal planning right now. Yeah, yes. For sure. So can you read the copy examples that you did with this guide?
Yes. So if we're speaking to the problem, okay, I'm going to tell you the problem first, and then I'm going to introduce our solution. So the example would be like, you know the drill. It's 5 p.m. and you have no idea what's for dinner. You're tired of the same three meals on repeat. The grocery store shopping feels chaotic and expensive, and you want to eat healthier, but meal planning feels overwhelming. Okay. So this is the stress that we're all feeling. Okay. And that, by the way, we leave that out in bullet points. It was bullet points, okay? And then we say, but that is why I created the stress-free meal planning guide. So we're immediately entering the solution. And why, and by the way, I think like how we say it of like, that's why I created, is we're saying like, I get it. I stressed about all those things, those problems you had, I had them too, and I get it. And so I decided to meet this need. And then we say the step-by-step system takes the guesswork out of meal planning, helping you plan a full week of meals in minutes, grocery shop efficiently and save money, and prep ahead so dinner is quick and easy every night. No more stress, no more wasted food, just simple, healthy meals your family will actually eat. Okay? So we just communicated to them their problem and their solution really quickly. And that was great.
And that was all done with powerful copy. And I can already visualize how the sales page could work with that. Like how you mentioned the bullet pointed sections of making it very readable as somebody is scrolling quickly on their phone, maybe having a mock-up with a visual of the guide, even like a GIF, if it's like flipping open or something like that. Like, so then that's where kind of going back to like, write this powerful copy and then go, okay, let's pop it over here and visually showcase everything that I want this person to feel and read as they're going through.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then, okay, so that's our top section, headline and subhead, second section, the problem and the solution. The third essential section, social proof and testimonials. Build trust, you guys. Like, that is what this is doing. If you are brand new to launching, or maybe this product is brand new, you still have other testimonials, I'm sure, from your audience, from other things that you have done, other ways that you have worked with them. And so don't shy away from this if this is like your very first product, or like the first time you've ever launched this one. Erin and I specifically love the very raw, organic screenshots of DMs, screenshots of things in a Facebook group, like whatever, it looks so visually appealing like that. Because again, if we go back to like how people are reading it on a sales page, they know what that looks like. Like, we all know what a DM looks like. We all know what something on a Facebook feed looks like. So it might make them stop and read it. And it feels real. Like, not that they're going to think that you made up the testimonial, but we want to give them no doubt. Like, no, this is somebody actually typed this and sent this over to me. So it's really powerful to just save screenshots and use those direct on the sales page.
Absolutely. I will say, from my like designer aesthetic eye and like that likes really clean things, I hate the screenshots of things on things. But it literally is like the definition of show me the receipts. Like, mm-hmm. People literally have the receipts there. And so it is wonderful. And I think people love feeling like they did not, this isn't fake. This is real as it can possibly get. And so, yeah, save your screenshots. That's amazing.
Yes, I love that. Okay, so those are our first three essentials for the sales page. Let's jump into the fourth one, features versus benefits. This one, I'm not going to lie, I remember when I designed, like when I wrote and was working on the design for my very first sales page, this was probably 8 years ago. So not a services page, but like an actual sales page for an online course. Mm-hmm. I remember my mentor at the time trying to explain the difference between features and benefits to me. And it's not that hard of a concept, but 8 years ago me was like, I am baffled. Like, it was like very difficult for me to understand this concept of features and benefits, yet it is so powerful. So before we even give them like these examples that you have, Erin, I'd love to kind of do a quick little side note and explain like what is the difference between a feature and a benefit of the product that we are helping talk about like in the copy.
Absolutely. Okay. So a feature is an example of like, this is exactly what you will get. Okay. So like, for example, like, you know, a feature of eating at Texas Roadhouse is that you're going to get those rolls. Okay. That's a feature. That's what you get. However, a benefit of that is that, okay, well, Texas, that's a bad. You're going to eat all of the carbs before your dinner arrives.
You're going to get a to-go box to have lunch the next day because you didn't eat your meal.
What a benefit. But I think that one of the things that is really key here is instead of just listing the features, what you actually want to do is tell them the benefits. So instead of going, so if we go back to our free meal planning guide, instead of saying 7 dinner recipes, okay, instead of just saying that, we say done for you meal planning template, customizable grocery list, right? Like we are telling them exactly how this is going to take the stress out of their life rather than just saying like 7 dinner recipes, grocery list. Like we're telling them this is how this is going to improve your life. And so that's the difference in a feature versus a benefit. You want to communicate to them how this product is going to benefit and change their lives, not just what it contains.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think something that is really helpful to think through is you will have some buyers that are a little bit more type A that want like the feature. Like they want to know like, okay, how many hours of content is in this course or how many modules is it? How many pages is the workbook? Like they're going to ask those questions and you might be like, well, I don't know. Like how many hours did I film? Like you might have to be going back and looking at that. But that's where speaking to different types of buyers can be helpful in here. So I typically recommend to our clients, if you're going to have some features, so again, features is like the nuts and bolts, 10 modules, 90 minutes of content, like that sort of very like black and white data. If you're going to have that, we've all seen those spots on the sales page where it has the investment section of the page and it talks about, you know, this is what like it would be $199 slash through 50% off. It's only $99 right now or whatever it might be. And they have a list of the features right there. So you're still hitting that like type A, like check, check, check. Okay, here's what it is. But the marketing angle for this full canvas is on the benefits like Erin is talking about. Like we want to speak to who is this helping and how does that feature help them? How does it help them to have 10 modules in your course? Like, is it because it's a full signature program? So they're getting the A to Z. That's what you need to highlight. Not that it's necessarily 10 modules.
Absolutely. Because like, I think about like, you know, let's say that we just did like the 7 dinner recipes. One of my first questions, if I'm looking at that, is going to be like, am I going to like all 7? Right? Like what I want to understand is like, oh, done for you meal planning or like alternates to customize for your family and stuff like that. And so you want those things to speak to your anxieties and to clarify for you of like, no, this is making me feel better and better about this purchase.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So then the fifth essential for the sales page is our pricing and payment options. This is a section on your sales page that, depending what the product is, could be an incredibly simple section. So for this example, it would be a simple, like it's a $47, you know, guide. So we don't necessarily need tons of bells and whistles in terms of copy or design for a section like this. Now a $1,000 to $3,000 product, you need to have some more bells and whistles on this section. You need to have some more copy. You need to really showcase to them the value proposition, like what are they getting and how much is it? But for this example, we're going to go on a little bit more of a simple side of things, and that's okay. Yeah. So don't feel like you have to just add fluff to add fluff. You're going to know what you need to include on this section based on the price of the product.
Absolutely. Think about it as like, you know, if I can convince my husband to pick up a pizza way easier than I can convince him to take me to like a 4-course dinner, because it's easier to hand your credit card over to the pizza delivery versus that, oh, this could be like a $400 meal kind of thing. And so the more the larger the investment, the more you need to kind of convince them, like, this is worth that price. So for our, like, one time, for our meal planning kit, you know, we say like one time investment of $47 for less than the cost of one takeout meal of a family of four, you get a complete meal planning system that saves you hours every single week. And if there's any time that you're going to add like a free bonus or anything, this is also a great time to like add that incentive there. So for example, you know, we could do like a, you know, get my 30-minute dinner mini recipe book, which is like a $19 value for free if you purchase today or something like that. You can communicate that there. But if you are doing a higher ticket item, you're going to have to necessarily talk to them more. You're going to have to maybe say like, what is this life-changing thing worth to you? Is it worth this kind of thing? And so, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then right underneath of that section, we usually recommend having an FAQ section. Mm-hmm. We like to have FAQ sections on a sales page because, again, you're going to have those people that just need all of that extra reassurance. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be going to a section like that and literally reading every single word that mm-hmm. you have put in these FAQs. It can also be helpful for you to save you from getting emails if you've addressed some of those questions in the FAQ. And so we want the FAQ to address the common concerns that people have up front. And again, these can vary and it can also be dependent on the product. I have some clients where we have an FAQ section that's 15 plus questions. And we've designed it in a way to not feel overwhelming with the fact that there are 15 question and answers there. But then I have other clients that only have like 3 to 5 questions mm-hmm. on their FAQ. I personally do not think there is a right or wrong when it comes to how many questions you answer. I think it's dependent on the product. So again, mm-hmm. a $47 guide will likely have less questions than a, you know, $1,000, $2,000 course. It can also mm-hmm. be dependent on your audience. We have some clients that we're working with that have an older audience. They want all of the FAQs. Mm-hmm. They just mm-hmm. need those FAQs.
Yes.
Whereas other audiences don't need as many question and answers.
Yeah. And I will say like, you know, for this, if you are somebody that has like 15 and it, you know, from a design perspective, even if you only have like 4 or 5 questions, it's okay to do features where it's like, here's the question and I need to click that question to see the answer drop down. It keeps it clean. And so whether you're doing 15 questions or 4, consider that design aspect of cleanliness so that you aren't putting too much text right there on that screen and losing your audience there for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then of course, we want to make sure that we have an ending call to action. Now, obviously mm-hmm. you're going to have a call to action, a CTA throughout the sales mm-hmm. page. We talked about how you're presenting the solution right there in that second canvas of the page. So there should be a buy now, get it now mm-hmm. button up there. And then in the investment section, you might have another button, but Aaron and I both, when we're designing, we like to end the page with that. Mm-hmm. It's like the caboose, you know, like we need yep. something. You don't just want to leave people with FAQs and like, and what if they still have questions? Like we want to have some sort of ending canvas that wraps up the page and has a very, very strong CTA.
Yeah, we call it literally the final CTA. So like for a low, like mini sales page, something like we would be guiding here, I would say like anywhere from 3 to 4 CTAs, like, you know, buttons where they can buy is really good. But for something that's like a long form page, I mean, I would go up from like 5 to 7 like CTA buttons, because you need basically at any point where you have convinced them that, yes, this is the product for me, you don't want that buy now button, which we wouldn't necessarily buy now, but like you don't want that button too far away from them kind of thing. So for example, the final CTA here for our like meal planning guide would be something like, ready to simplify mealtime, click below and get instant access and start planning your stress-free meals today. And the button might not say something like buy now. Instead, it might say like, get your stress-free meal planning guide now kind of thing. And so that instant creates urgency there. And Kat, I want to like say something, because you like have talked about this like multiple times as we've been designing these sections and talking through it, but like every single one of these sections matters. And I think that what's important is some buyers are quick to say yes. They're going to read your headline and they're going to see the problem and solution and they're the key features and they're going to go, boom, I'm sold. I don't need to go any further. Okay. Like Yes, I am stressed about meal planning. Yes, I need a plan. You're selling it to me for $47. Sold. I'm done. But then there are other people who need more convincing. And the further down your sales page people get, that's who you're talking to. You're talking to the people who need to be drawn in a little bit more. So like a quick way to think about it is your fast decision makers, they need a clear problem, solution, strong offer, and they're going to buy. Your cautious buyers, they are weighing their decision carefully. And as they scroll further and further, they're looking for reassurance. They want those testimonials. They want the FAQs and they want the additional proof before they are committing. The deeper someone goes on the sales page, the more they're going to feel confident in their decision. And so that's what you need to be thinking about as you're getting towards the end of that for sure.
Fully, I can even think of times in my own buying history, whether it's business or personal, where there are certain things where I'm like, done, like, all right, I am in. It is for whatever reason calling to me at this moment and I have to have it. And then there are other things that I keep it open in my chat. Yes. And I just come back, like, I just keep coming back to it. And I'm like, yes, noodling on it. And I'm like hemming and hawing about it. So I think we can all relate to being both the fast decision maker as well as being the cautious buyer. And so knowing that you want to make sure that you're addressing the concerns of both of those on your sales page so that you don't lose either one of them.
Yes, as absolutely. Absolutely. Each section plays a role in reinforcing trust and reducing hesitation so that they can feel confident in their purchase that they're making with you.
Yeah, I love that. So which sections? We have all of those seven. And again, guys, there is that download. So I know we went through those. You're like driving while you're listening to this. I hope you weren't like trying to take notes. Download the freebie. It's got a checklist in there. It's got the example copy that Erin wrote. So you have everything that you need and that freebie, it'll jump right to your inbox. But Erin, could you tell us, like, of those seven, is there a section that you feel like is sometimes overlooked or underdeveloped, or that you see more often underdeveloped?
That's a good question. And I feel like this is a hard question, but I think after like pondering on this a little bit, I think I would still say the problem and solution. And I think
at the top. So we had heading, subhead, and then problem and solution.
And I think that this is key to a sales page. I do think that most sales pages, from even just like a basic marketing, try to have this section. I think they try. But I think that they can be underdeveloped, too generic, or they don't resonate with their audience's true problem. And so in return, they can't communicate the value of the solution they think they've created. I think this is why it is so important not to just create random products that you think might do well, but like knowing your audience and what they are struggling with and what they are dealing with, and then crafting a product to truly help them. When you do that, your problem and solution copy writes itself. It basically says, I see you because I know what you're dealing with, and I've created something that is going to move you from that problem into where you want to be.
Absolutely. And I think that it is, there's been like a shift in the industry. I feel like when I started working in this space with digital products, a lot of the times educators were making themselves the problem and solution of like, because I have felt this problem, let me give you my story and then tell you how I landed on this solution. And yes, that is powerful. Like, again, people want to feel seen. They want to feel like they understand like your background to know like, well, why are you good at meal planning? Like, how can you relate? Like, you don't understand. I have five kids and I'm da da da. And like, they need to relate. But this is where it comes down to, we don't want to repel and attract, like, we don't want to repel them away that high on the sales page.
Yes.
Like, I want them to not see you. I want them to see themselves in the solution. And so maybe less storytelling, save that storytelling for the email when you're getting super personal and like what you've done in that email or in that Instagram reel. But in this problem and solution area, we're speaking more to how does this solve their problem, not how did it solve your problem when you were creating it.
Because I mean, one, you need, obviously, like, they need to be the story of, they need to be the hero of the story. However, there's another part of it of, you had your problem, but you did not live their life. Maybe you had their problem in a different time era, maybe you had it pre-COVID and everything changed after COVID, like all of those things. So if you put you at the center, you have lost your audience because they need to know that their problems will be addressed and that they can be really seen.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. This has all been so helpful. So we've talked a lot about the writing side of these seven essential sections. When it comes to designing these, do you have any quick tips for people to help make sure that these sections stand out visually, but also don't feel like overwhelming or like kind of too boxy on top of one another?
Absolutely. I think that, yes, that's so important. And so again, my biggest tip is going to be concise. Okay. Your text can get too heavy and it's going to make things be hard to design well and hard for the consumer to consume it and digest it in an important way. So when you are thinking about your text, if you have something that you find is a lot of narrative text, figure out how to break it up into bullet points, into list. I even like a box graphic sometimes. So like I think about like if I had something that had three key features that I wanted to talk about, I might do like a horizontal canvas of like three different boxes to kind of clean it up. I think that that would be a way to consume that visually or add some interest there. So that's one. I will say don't get too crazy on visual transitions and effects. I think that those things are really important and can add a lot of to a website. However, I can see websites all the time that get too much and you don't want people to feel like motion sick after like getting on your sales page. Okay. That is not conducive to a pleasant buying experience. And so don't get too crazy on the fades and the slides and the zooms and stuff like that. And then just like some very simple ones. Like if I'm going to do two canvases that I want to be like similar, like maybe the problem, and let's say I have a problem with a photo on the left and then text on the right. If I'm going to go to the next and I want to present my solution, if I just very cleanly wanted to go, I would probably put my photo on the right for the next session and my text on the left. Like I would just alternate that. I think it looks a little bit cleaner. And one of my biggest pet peeves is when people do a photo background. So like the background of the canvas is a photo and then their very next canvas is another photo and they line up right to each other. I do think that's a design faux pas for sure. And I don't like that one, but yeah, those are just some simple ones. Mm-hmm.
No, it's so good to hear you talk through them. And I know it's hard because we're talking about something that's so visual and we can't just like open up our laptop and like show like, this is my favorite one. And this one is a no-no. Like we can't do that in this situation. But it's still really helpful to like think through like, okay, how is the overall readability on the page? I was LOLing in my head when you were talking about all of the different like transitions. And I was remembering like the high school PowerPoint presentations that we would design. So fun. Like I loved like adding in all of the different things to it.
Yes. But as we've gotten older, vertigo has kicked in. Oh, and so
I don't think I have like any transitions on my website. Maybe like
we
one
can't
or two.
Hang the same way.
No, not at all. Okay. This has been so great. So I want to just remind you guys about the seven essential checklist that we have as a free resource that hopefully it's incredibly helpful for you guys as you are designing and writing your first sales page or auditing an existing sales page. So as we wrap up today, Erin, I want to make sure we touch on like your very best copywriting tips. So like no pressure at all, but we're like, what would be your number one go-to tip for writing copy that feels personal and engaging?
Okay, so I think I would say put yourself in the seat of the reader. So I am a one-on-one coffee girl personally. Like I want to sit down and hear someone's heart and talk to them. And I think that that's how I write copy a lot of the times. I want the reader to feel like I am sitting across from them, speaking directly to them and their heart and their needs. Not like they are just a generic member of my audience and I'm just trying to sell something to them, but that like we are friends and I deeply care about them and want to help them. And that approach is actually how I do it. Despite the brand or the voice, I can have a brand that is very professional, very polished, and still say no, because I'm trying to see the heart of like what the client would want or need and still speak to that. And so I think that that's your biggest thing is how to put yourself in the seat of the reader and really see them is one of the best ways to write something that feels personal and engaging.
I love that. I love that. And I can, because I know you so well, I like to see that in you. But it is such a great sales strategy. I mean, that's why I remember when I first did my ideal client avatar, it was like the trend at that time in our industry was like naming her and like, mm-hmm. you would know, you knew favorite color, where she shopped, like all of these things about her, but it helps you write stronger copy because yeah. you know who this person is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And last thing, what is a quick tweet for someone that they could do right now if they already have a sales page that would instantly improve their sales page?
I think it's literally going to be open your sales page and that header canvas right there. Make that headline 100% clear and compelling. Because if your headline doesn't instantly grab their attention, if it does not repel or attract and communicate the value, people won't even stick around to read the rest of the sales page or click the CTA. And so that is just, I think that that is so critical and important.
Love it. I love it. Okay. This was so good. There is like so much in this episode. I'm so excited for you guys to listen to it. And as you guys are listening through this, as you are auditing your sales page or working on your first sales page using that 7 essentials checklist, if you have questions, if you need any like one-on-one support, or if you guys have just anything, you're like, bring Erin back to the podcast and let's talk about these things. Like, we want all of that. So shoot our team an email, send us a DM, like whatever form of communication you would like to do. Like, we would love to talk to you. It was so fun, Erin, to have you on. I loved digging into this with you, and I'm just really grateful that you spent the time to like sit down and talk through all of this with me for everyone.
Same. This was so fun. Although I can be a concise writer, I'm typically very wordy. And so I was a little nervous, but this is so fun.
So you were like thinking in your brain, like, don't talk too much.
I'm stressed. No,
I love great. That. Thank oh my you. Gosh. No. It was so good. Well, thank you, Erin. And guys, thank you all so much for listening. And I will be back next week with another episode.